Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
In the garden, I play my dream.
Welcome to episode 434 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and lately prostitutes. Well, good to be here with y'all. Episode 434. Wow, it's been that long. This episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. TPC will get you 5% off. You can be there in person or you can be there virtually. And judging by the things going on in this world right now, folks, you can't put a damper on your health. In fact, before we went live here, William was asking me if he ought to say anything about one of the things we're testing out right now. I said, no, let's just wait another week and see what's up. He's using it, and we are as well. So how you doing, son?
Pretty good. Speaking of that product, I'm not going to say what it is or anything like that. We put it in the baby's yogurt this morning, and she's looking at me like, what is this? What did you do to my yogurt? Because it's colored. It's not, you know, clear or anything like that. And I had to convince her, like, hey, it doesn't change the flavor, it doesn't change the taste or anything like that. It's perfectly fine. But yeah, the look she was giving me this morning is like, hey, yogurt is off limits. Don't be tampering with my yogurt in the morning.
Yeah, a little cracking up. That's grandpa's little sweetie. All right, y'all, also brought by Nessa's Hemp. That's going to be 10% off with promo code PERMA. Y'all keep her in your prayers because she's trying to speak truth to power in so many different ways. Had her on the other day, but you probably didn't see it because it wasn't on YouTube. But she was dropping some pretty good information in there that everybody wants to know about. I guarantee you want to know about all this stuff, folks. We are talking about this for a reason. Things are getting dumber and dumber and dumber by the day. I mean, son, do you think it's a coincidence that all in the same day, all within the same 12-hour period, we got fires at a refinery in Myanmar? We got fires at a refinery in Russia. We got fires at a refinery, at the biggest refinery in India, all on the same day. I guess they just had that a coming, huh?
Well, I think this lends more to your theory of Iran being in on it as well, like this being like a pre-planned thing, because this isn't a recent event. They've been burning up refineries in preparation for this, it seems like. Like, this has been going on for a while. I think it lends to your argument.
Yeah, well, your mom had brought it up from the word go. I mean, this is why I'm saying, y'all, she's one of the sharpest thinkers out there, but she only keeps it within the family half the time. She won't tell anybody else. But she had said from the beginning, man, this thing looks a little bit strange. And then I was starting, knowing how a military campaign should unfold, I'm like, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Israel is the size of New Jersey. How is it they have any runways at all? Because the first thing you would do if you want to lay siege to something is destroy. In fact, what do you think the 82nd Airborne is designed to do? Primarily, their number one function is to seize runways. In fact, when we were supposed to, I won't go into any great detail here, but that's exactly what the 82nd Airborne is designed to do, is to seize an airfield. Well, when you're shooting over supposedly all these missiles from Iran to Israel, Israel to Iran, you can't see it. First of all, you're not seeing anything that isn't told to you by prostitutes. You're thinking, hold on, how is anybody flying in and out of that airport? How's that happening? Because that would be the first thing you'd blow up. So I'm starting to wonder more and more with every passing day if, folks, let me just put it this way. And I go back to what Bobby Spaggs said on this show. Why he became a Christian was because of COVID. And his thinking was, if I remember properly, was that there is no way on earth you could get every single country to be in lockstep unless there was a puppeteer at the top of it. There's no way that would happen. So when he thought about that, he was like, oh my goodness, man, there has got to be some malevolent force controlling all these things. So
real quick on that note, like there's a reason in scripture, like Satan brings the Messiah up to the mountaintop and shows him, hey, I'll give you all of this. It's because he owns it. He can't give him something he doesn't own, this entire world.
Well, that's why, you know, when you go back to COVID, every nation, in fact, the only ones who didn't were typically black nations, and all of their leaders came up dead as all get out. Every last one of them, that one in Africa who sent a papaya and a goat to be tested, and they both came back positive. And he told the world about it. Next thing you know, he's dead. And then, you know, every other leader that spoke up against it, they were all from small countries, and every last one of them dead. So how is it, when anybody with any sense at all could see from the very beginning that the entire thing was a hoax, not just a hoax, but it was a depopulation design. And it didn't take me long to figure that out from the very beginning. Others, I'm not being critical of you because you didn't know what to believe. And you may have signed on. But anyway, how is it Iran was on board? How is it Russia was on board? How is it all of the UK was on board? How all of Europe, in fact, thrust upon most of the places in Africa? How is that, you know, and the only one that gave any pushback at all, strangely enough, was in El Salvador. Once Bukele realized, hold on, we got people dropping like flies, then all of a sudden he's like, he reached out, strangely enough, to Dr. Jack Cruz and realized, oh, okay, we're stopping all this right now. So there could have been some ignorance, but I'm thinking if a farmer in the middle of Western North Carolina can figure this out, have a hard time believing. So anyway, if it was that way with COVID, now all of a sudden, remember, folks, everybody talks about World War II. They even talk to a lesser extent about Korea. They talk a lot about Vietnam, but you ever notice, son, nobody ever talks about World War I?
Well, World War One, and then also, like, we didn't learn about Korea in school. Like, growing up, the only education outside of you that I had on Korea was Everybody Loves Raymond. Like, the dad fought in Korea, and that was really the only reference that I had towards Korea, especially not in school. We didn't learn anything about Korea in school.
That's why they call it the Forgotten War. Korea is really called the Forgotten War. Now, it was really an extension of World War II when we get down to brass tacks, but nobody ever talks about World War I. Because when you look at the work of people, intrepid researchers like Anthony Sutton, folks, write this down. I'm telling you, you can even find some of his videos that he did online before he died, but he wrote a series of books. He was a big-time academic, and once he started telling everybody the real truth about World War II, about communism, about Wall Street, about all these different things that he spoke about and they wrote about, all of a sudden he was persona non grata. Well, anyway, you had people like G. Edward Griffin. You had people like Eustace Mullins. Intrepid researchers out there that were telling you the real reason why World War I happened. Especially people like Eustace Mullins. And when you get down to brass tacks on it, was they had a population and they were feeling like, I mean, folks, this is going to sound about as Malthusian as it gets, but truth of it is, when you get down to brass tacks, they realized they had a population, the money games were falling short, you know, they were running out of lies to tell, and they were thinking, okay, we got to do a great culling. And that's exactly what it was. That was exactly what it was, but you're never going to find that in mainstream history books. So that's why nobody ever talks about World War I. But we're in the same. If you look at it, if you look at World War I, supposedly the reasons why it started, well, the real reasons why it started, and you overlay that to right now, you see exactly the same metrics. In fact, I really ought to do I ought to do a show on it and go into great detail. But yeah, exactly, Dad,
do a show on it. Sorry, go ahead.
Exactly what the ruling elite was their impetus with the Milner Group and a number of others at that time, their impetus for starting a world war, which, you know, at that time it was called the Great War, wasn't called World War One. The impetus for doing that is in fact the same impetus of doing now. And I'm the only researcher that I know of that's made the correlation. So yeah, son, as you were.
Yeah, you really got to do like a breakdown of that. That's, I think, the most requested like podcast episode on here, like in the comments and in emails and stuff like that. It is by far the most, as nothing, not permaculture, no permaculture related questions. They want to know about that history, specifically about World War One and the correlation between then and now.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get that done. It's just this time of year, as you know, we're running at 100 miles an hour doing everything. I mean, it's from dawn till dusk, and I don't want to come out here. I could give it to you from the top of my head, but if I do that, I know I'm going to leave out some critical stuff. Most of it I do know, but I really need to get myself some notes. I need to get that put together here in a couple of weeks. A couple of people, Jerry says, yeah, refineries in California shuttered due to government regulation. There you go. That's part of it too. And then Accidental Homestead says, just watched a good movie, Jones Plantation. Folks, if you haven't seen that documentary, well, it's not a documentary. It's a fiction, but it explains exactly. I'm glad you brought that up, Accidental Homestead. I'm glad you brought that up. I think Larkin Rose wrote that. Anyway, I saw it, and it's a low-budget kind of film, but the point is made, and it's made very well. It shows you, if you're unaware, of exactly how the political, the world system, all of it ties in together. So going back to World War One and overlaying it to where we are right now, you have populations that were starting to become a little bit restless. And powers that shouldn't be know that they have to prune back the most capable part of every population, which is going to be young men. And they always use a war to do that. And they constantly prune and prune and prune. I know that sounds about as Malthusian as it gets, but folks, we are dealing with freaking demons, okay? We just found out that the ruling elite of this world, and we only got a small percentage of the Epstein files, we found out that they're literally eating children and doing other unthinkable things that in a million years I'd never think of, that these ruling elite are doing that, and we're not talking about it. So if you think there isn't a consequence for that, well, hold on to your hat, because that's part of what we're talking about today, or at least the results of it. But anyway, I didn't mean to go down that rabbit hole. In a nutshell, you are seeing, I think, and I'm more and more convinced by it every day, that every one of these countries is in on it in a big way. Because if you were going to wipe out Israel, the first thing you would do would be to wipe out every single landing strip over there. That would be the first thing you did. So, yeah, it just seems like this is going to be a lot of blood and treasure over there. Reservists are being called up right now. So this, they have so little respect for us. They didn't even start with a false flag. I mean, what does that tell you? Anyway, son, let me jump in straight into farm news. Anyway. Well, that's quite the transition. Here's my tactic right now, y'all. So in some of these beds where I had to go buy lousy soil that they call compost, which isn't, got this little thing that I'm doing. You don't want to put in the soil savers at the same time as any compost extract that you make. They have different criteria, but it's not as if they work against one another. You have more facultative organisms in soil saviors, but you have very anaerobic in your compost. So it's aerobic. Aerobic critters that are in your compost. If it's anaerobic, that's definitely not what you don't want to use. Anyway, so once I stagger it like 3 days apart, one day a week I'll do soil saviors, and then another day I'm hitting it with the extract. So that's one thing I got going right now. If you're looking for a link for that, it'll be down below. Yeah, we got the sheep moving every single day now, and they are absolutely loving it. I ran them up the side of this mountain, and the moms were losing condition like it was going out of style. I mean, I got them on, you know, stuff that's like a 45 degree angle, probably more than that up here, and they were losing condition. This one has triplets, so I had to hurry up and get them off of there, get them back on regular pasture, but they lost a lot of conditioning, and it's my fault. Probably should have waited another rotation before I let them back around there. But I was being a little bit greedy with my grazing days. So other news we got around here. Captured two swarms and lost two swarms. folks, just because you got them doesn't mean they're going to stay. So that's not happened to us before. Never two in a row. It's never been like that. You know, usually some folks say you got about a 50-50 split, but I think we used some lousy foundation in there, and that's why they didn't stay the second time. Put in two more trees. Not my best favorite time of the year to do it, but got that done. I had to get rid of a couple that didn't make it. And, you know, what else am I doing? I'm basically off this high, I mean, shoot, this thing's probably 60 degrees, I'm guessing. Trying to get wood off the side of there, make it a little bit easier grazing. Sheep can manage it, but they probably shouldn't do it when they are nursing. So lesson on me. Let's see here. What else do I got here? Yeah. So anybody out there that bought a wellness blanket, remember, put that bad boy in the sun every so often. You want to stick it out there, get it in the sun, let it recharge. And you also want to do that with your EMF rocks. So one last thing I'll cover before I pass it over to William is, you know, I talk often about Jack Cruz, Dr. Jack Cruz, neurosurgeon. And lately he's been kind of tearing up the world with the latest information that he dropped regarding magnetism. And this is not good news for a lot of us, especially all my Canadian listeners out there. Yeah, it doesn't look really, really great for Canada in terms of magnetism. And frankly, the Midwest in America is the absolute worst. There's a number of other places when they've finally released some of this data where, in fact, he had a list of like 10 places, the top 10 best places to live. And some of the places you would think that would be really, really good, like Puerto Rico, are not. And it has to do with some magnetism issues that are going on there. So, yeah, that's why, in fact, East Coast of Africa used to be a really awesome place. It may not be in future days. Anyway, this sort of thing is happening. And if you can get yourself by a volcano, strangely enough, one of the best places to live is going to be around the Pacific Northwest. In terms of magnetism. So remember, it's light water magnetism, according to him, and it's proven to be something. So folks, you might want to look into some of that information out there. He did a recent interview. I thought it was the most comprehensive with Dr. Alexis Cowan. There were some guys on there talking about him on Alex Jones. They got about half the story right. But anyway, yeah. Anyway, that seems to be catching on like wildfire. Well, it seems like it did, and then now it's not. So, yeah, stay alert, stay alive. What's up, son?
Well, on that note, there's also some unique planetary alignments going on right now, which I don't keep in mind. Like, I don't believe in a lot of this stuff, but the people in charge do. So keep that in mind. There might be some things popping off here soon because the planets are aligned in a certain way. Like, you have, I forget the exact alignment or whatever, but it seems like they're all lining up to some extent. Either in pairs, like groups of, was it like three and four or something like that? And then I don't know, but just keep in mind that that's going on. And there's a lot of crazy things that happen on Earth whenever things like that go on. Whether they're like designed to go that way, either because it's caused by the planetary alignments or the people in charge believe that certain things are available or unlocked during these planetary alignments. That's all I'm trying to say. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on with that, but we just got our sweet potatoes in the mail. I started some sweet potato slips myself. It just didn't produce nearly enough, of what I'm trying to get done or try to grow this year. Like, I'm dedicating like 2 to 3 40-foot by 4-foot beds to sweet potatoes this year. And then the sweet potato slips I started didn't produce enough for those beds. So I was prepping beds earlier today. I'm going to get those planted and film a video on it tomorrow. A lot of the methods that I'm going to talk about tomorrow all came from Danny and Wanda, the sweet potato king himself. So getting that ready. And then what else did I do? Man, oh, I filmed a video today talking about the curing part of compost. I did my last flip on the compost pile. And then I talked about like the curing phase and how this, like, if you use your compost too early, you kind of just wasted your whole time with the compost. If you don't allow allow it to come down to ambient temperature, allow the fungi to hatch and then start spreading out, and then allow the predators to come in. Otherwise, you're just putting bacteria in your compost or in your garden. And that's something that I haven't, like, of all the samples I've done, Nobody was ever, the only time I've ever seen a sample that was lacking bacteria was after putting down the Silas tarp and doing the soil test after that. Nobody else has ever been lacking bacteria. That's usually one of the first things that show up after bare soil. Like if you have weeds and stuff like that, you got bacteria in your pasture or in your soils or your gardens or whatever. So if you just take your, you know, if you just take your compost, don't let it cure and then apply it, all you're doing is adding more of what's already there, which is still good. Like it's still better than what you can find in the store, because there ain't nothing living in the stuff you can find at the store. And then also just prepping to get ready to go to the Mountain Readiness Festival here coming up soon, which seemed like, y'all, it's already April. It's already almost the end of April. I don't even know how that happened. This year has flown by, but that's what we got going on here.
Yeah, that I'm saying the same doggone thing. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me, man. I'm running around here with no clothes on, and then all of a sudden it got cold last night, and I'm like, okay, man, yeah. I'm still doing it. You know, I'm still out here, you know, and then it's always on the heels. When you see a 30-degree temperature shift and nobody wakes up to it, I mean, I say nobody, but mostly almost nobody sees it or notices it or realizes these zigzags they're creating in the sky and how they're correlated to the weather. I mean, or the next rad towers, you know, speaking of next rad towers, it sure is funny, you know, for years, I'm going to bring this up as I'm going backwards a little bit, but in Iran, son, did you hear years ago? Because I'm kind of a news junkie. I kept up for years and Iran had been complaining, saying that the U.S. was keeping Iran from getting any kind of rain. They had been complaining about this, saying we were using weather manipulation to keep them from getting any rain. Well, guess what happened? When this war kicked off, it may be legit, it may not. I don't know. All I know is I got a lot of questions. I do know that Iran basically wiped out every single U.S. base that was near there. And all of this highfalutin radar system that was over there, they utterly destroyed that. Very expensive. And all of a sudden, Iran started getting rain again. How about that?
Okay. So, if this doesn't exist, then why is it illegal for countries to use this on each other? Like, why is that a law? Why is that a... If it doesn't exist, it seems weird to make a law for something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. It's like Jack Cruz always has to tell people, if it's all a conspiracy theory, you can't call it a conspiracy theory when there are patents on it, okay? Yeah. So now all of a sudden they're realizing that the next rad radar towers and stuff that were being used over there supposedly for radar, these things have multiple uses, folks. They were keeping rain from hitting Iran. And by the way, it's the only place over there where they source almost all of their water, not from desalinization plants, from ancient structures that they still use to this day. They're not as backwards as everybody wants everybody to believe. In fact, I can't even believe they're pulling the old WMD out of the hat again, and you got people buying it. I'm just still blown by this. Anyway, all of a sudden, they're getting unbelievable amounts of rainfall. And they're saying, oh, thought we were lying, huh? Now, all of a sudden, they got rain again. How about that? All right. Well, with that said, I will say, William brought it up a moment ago, Mountain Readiness, that's going to be May 1st through the 3rd. William and I are going to be showing y'all how to process a sheep from start to finish. We're going to show you the professional way, and it works no matter the animal. You want to be there for this, folks. I mean, look, it is getting real. I just told you a couple of minutes ago, we got 3 refineries over the last 12 hours all of a sudden on fire. We got ships blowing over there. You know what? This thing is no end in sight so far as we can tell. And things are about to get real. So, folks, I'm telling you, if you got skills you need covered, you better get out here, because Mountain Readiness is the best festival you haven't heard about. So go check that out. My Chronic Silver, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And then Wave Watch, Billy 100 will get you $100 off that watch. And that thing is the shiznit. Don't leave home without it. Son, it looks like we got a question right there.
Real quick before we get to the question, the Wave Watch, that thing I've recently discovered. I've mentioned it before in prior podcasts, but if you haven't heard it, I recently discovered I have really bad allergies. And before, the only thing that would fix my allergies was carnivore diet. That stopped working. But the Wave Watch, if you put it on the sinus relief setting, I've noticed really, really, really helps with my allergies. So that's a new discovery of what the Wave Watch can do. It's like every time somebody tests it on some ailment, it ends up working. This one's from Marlis Neal 6727. I want to purchase some land for a homestead. I am working my guerrilla garden in the meantime, but what size should I look for and what should my budget be? 30% down, 100%. Thanks so much. I would say you really don't need any more than, I would say, 5 acres. I have never seen anybody fully design and put to the max a 5 acre property of hey, this is max output for this piece of property. As far as what you need to design and install and everything, never seen that done before. And you can produce a ton of food on just 5 acres. As far as a budget goes, that's going to kind of depend on you and what you can afford and things like that. But Dad, what do you think about the 30% down or 100%?
Well, I'm not going to tell you what investments to make, but I'm saying if at all possible, okay, we know that this dollar is losing steam by the day. It is. I'm just going to tell you straight, we live in the modern version of Rome. And just like Rome, the plebs couldn't see the collapse. Now, all the patricians, they got on the first thing smoking over to Constantinople because they knew they didn't pay the Visigoths and they knew they were going to come looking for their money. So I'm saying we are in the same position right now. And people are asking me, what should I do? I'll never give you financial advice. I'm just saying, if it were me, it seems that whatever disposable money I have would be better spent on tangible items. If you need new tires on a car, you're probably better served to get that now, especially when no sulfuric acid is coming over. If you need computer chips, you might want to think about that now. If you're looking to get land, maybe. Maybe not. I mean, it's one of those permaculture answers where it depends. I don't know enough about your situation to really say. Oh, right on cue. Brands, thank you so much for the bread. If you break bread, I won't fake dead. All right. So let's get into first good news article. The sun cannot be taxed. Why energy freedom is the ultimate form of personal liberty. Now, what this article is basically saying in a nutshell is, look, hey, get yourself on solar. But as a journeyman electrician with almost 30 years experience, I'm going to tell you a little bit different. If you do that, be really, really cautious, because I've learned so much over the last year and a half about the proximity where any of us should be towards any of this power generation. I won't go through all the egghead electrician theory and all that kind of stuff, but the worst thing you can do, the worst thing, for two reasons, is putting your solar panels on your roof. Number one, the EMF coming off those things is cooking, frying, and baking your brain. I am not being hyperbolic there. I'm dead serious. Number two, I've never known anybody to put panels on those roofs that didn't eventually leak. And so that's another reason. But honestly, the first one is the most important. You want to make sure you have a little bit of distance. Now, how far is that? It all depends. Once again, that's that permaculture answer. It all depends. You want to make sure that you are having that stuff tested, because it's putting off a lot of, could be a lot of dirty power that you're going to suffer from. So that's the only caution that I'm going to tell you right now, is because whenever you rectify or transform power, you're creating disturbance, and that disturbance radiates into you. I could talk about this, and I'm trying to give you an explanation that most people would understand. So you want to make sure your proximity is a fair distance away if you possibly can. Get a bigger gauge wire, transmit that stuff as far away from you as possible. But if you got it on your house, folks, and I've seen and I know people, I've never been able to break it to them, where they got that stuff on their houses, it's the worst decision you could ever make.
Is there a way to clean it up? Like, outside of putting let's say the panels are on a rack outside. Is there any way to clean it up once you bring it into the house and you transform it?
Yeah, potentially a capacitor bank or something like that could do it. That's really, I haven't personally done it. Theoretically, I know that there are things that could help, but I would definitely try to get distance as your best friend when it comes to power generation. So be very, very cautious about that. All right, next good news story. A study finds wild bees not managed hives drive tomato pollination in organic systems. Now, they tried this experiment overseas, I want to say Italy. And what they're finding out is that the places where they brought in non-native pollinators to certain farms, it didn't do as well as the native pollinators. Meaning that if you're not out there, folks, this is why I don't mow. Well, that's not entirely true. I mow areas that I know the sheep can't get, but I take that. I use those clippings for compost. Okay. I'm not just mowing for the sake of mowing. I capture it in a bagger and then I go out there and I make compost with it because I need some nitrogen. So yeah, there are times where mowing makes absolute sense if you're going to do it that way. But when you use mechanical means to take down all the stuff that your pollinators need, well, that ain't doing them any favors, especially if you got things that you want to depend on your natural pollinators for. But we're finding out that the natural pollinators do a far better job than bringing in bees. I mean, honeybees specifically. Now, they don't have to work exclusively. I mean, one can work with the other because we see it here. We got more pollinators than you can shake a stick at. I mean, butterflies galore, every kind of bee you can make, carpenter bees, bumblebees, honeybees, you name it. And if we didn't have a single pollinator here that we brought in, the job would still be getting done. So once again, that kind of tells you how dismal shape they must be in California with those almond places. Go ahead, son.
This is from Agape Field. Should we put electricity underground in conduit instead of overhead in our wooded area?
Now, I would have had a different answer from you 3 years ago. I would have always elected to put everything underground. But believe it or not, when it comes to your Wi-Fi and your fiber optics and your electrical transmission, it's actually better overhead. It travels, it's counterintuitive, but there's more of a deleterious effect going underground. So yeah, it's a little more unsightly. Nobody likes overhead lines. I know I don't, and my power is run underground. But yeah, it is less harmful to have it overhead. Strangely enough, because it can distribute itself through the air. So nobody wants to hear that sort of thing because nobody wants to see those unsightly power lines. But yeah, your distribution is always going to be better for you being overhead. But you want to try to make sure you, no matter the voltage, you want to make sure that you try to steer as much of your activity away from that thing as possible. And if you can, I mean, if it's at all possible, turn off the power to your bedrooms at night. I mean that. If you can go with a little DC battery fan or whatever, if you need that noise or whatever the case, the background noise, that's always good too. But if you can turn off the breaker going to your room, that's going to work better because strangely enough, William can vouch for this. Most of the wiring that's run through the walls in your house is about head level on your bed. So, yeah. And if you do what we call in the electrical trade, the right-hand rule, we got magnetic flux, you got all kinds of stuff, and it's all near your head. So that's another little hack there too.
Well, okay, it's so also fine. Going above your head with, because everybody has lights in their bedroom. It's always going, like sometimes it's also just like, for the lights, it could just be draped over the rafters in your bedroom as well. So yeah, head height when you're laying down and then also above you.
Yeah, it's above you. So it's definitely creating a unpleasant environment in there. But yeah, it's like trying to find the cream of the crap, y'all. I mean, there's no great answer to a lot of this stuff. Most of us need power. And, you know, if I ever get around to building something else, man, I'm going to do everything I can to try to limit as much as I possibly can. All right. Final thing here, food processing level, not plant base level determines cardiovascular risk. In a nutshell, what they're telling you in this article, if you're going out there and you're trying to eat healthy and you're eating processed food, no matter how good it is, the processed garbage is not as good as the food garbage that you're going to get from the store in its natural form. That's essentially what they're telling you. If there's any kind of processing, and if you look on the back of whatever and you can't pronounce a single ingredient, then you need to keep walking. That's what they're basically saying in here. So it's not whether it has all the right ingredients. It's whether or not those ingredients, it's like Michael Pollan once said, and I agree with him. He says, I think you should be allowed to eat anything you want as long as you make it. And I agree with him. I absolutely agree with him. Yes, son, can you read that next one?
Yeah, this was, uh, oh, it took away. This is from Agape Fields saying, thank you, not concerned with what it looks like. We were told by Entergy rep to put it underground. Thanks for letting me know that overhead is safer for us. She's saying thank you. Now, Bill Zegley did have, he did say something earlier. He said, it's 420 and no Hooter Bandit jokes. What's up, Pimp Master?
Oh, I never been a Hooter Bandit, man. I don't know anything about that stuff, but I am aware of this whole 420 thing. Yeah. So for, I guess a hat tip to all you people wanting to do a little puff, puff, give or puff, puff, pass, whatever y'all do these days. You know, I encourage you to quit it. To stop it, I've never met any Hooter Bandits out there that had any kind of ambition that did this on a regular basis. Wave Watch Billy 100. All right. So we don't have anything from Eric. And EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Look, I've been a journeyman electrician for a long, long time, and I've put in a lot of transient voltage surge suppressors out there. And I'm here to tell you, nobody makes a better one. EMP Shield, the best money can buy. $50 off with promo code PERMA. All right, so we're going to get down to brass tacks here. I know there's something of a theme that we keep getting into right now, and a lot of it is preparedness-based, I'll admit. Because, frankly, the people at Fix News, they're lying to you. The people at MSNBC, they're lying to you. Anything that they are marketing to you, that you get for free or with a subscription to cable or whatever the case may be, they're all lying to you. We are headed for a brick wall, and it's accelerating. And judging by what I see, it looks like it's only going faster and faster and faster and faster. Not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, y'all. I'm just keeping it real. I'm just telling you straight that we are hitting a time where you may have to start all over again. It may not be in the place you want, whether it's the magnetism that we talked about a little bit before. I mean, sure enough, this stuff will start catching up and people are going to start asking critical questions about certain things. It could be, you know, they do a false flag here in CONUS. I mean, it could be any of those things. Any of those things could be a reason why you may have to pack up and start all over again. So, we came up with the first 10 things I'd bill if I lost everything tomorrow. So I guess I'll kick this off. And I'm not going to tell you from ground up. I'm just saying some things that you really might want to put in your cabeza regarding all this. And number one for me is going to be water security. I'm talking rain catchment immediately, no matter the structure. Preferably something that's going to catch clean stuff. Gravity-fed storage if possible, because you may not have access to power. You also want multiple filtration methods, whether it's ceramic, charcoal, sand, or maybe a combination of all three, or maybe some other means that you haven't had. Redundancy is the rule when it comes to this thing. Remember, in preparedness, two is one and one is none. So if all you have right now to your home, if all you have is what's coming in through the utility, you want to be extremely, extremely careful, because there are people I know that have had utility stuff and also dug a well. And in addition to that, so you want to make sure you're staying on top of that. That's me. That's my first one.
The first one that I'm going to talk about, and not like first thing I would do as soon as I get to the property, just my first point would be establishing like orchards and tree systems. Cause the sooner you plant it, given the right season, keep that in mind. But the sooner you plant it, the sooner you get to the point where you can harvest. And they're also very, very stable systems as well. And you can use that in conjunction. Like, you can grow your trees, especially when you first put them in the ground. You can grow your trees and your garden in the same exact location because there's still a lot of sun hitting the ground. Orchard and tree systems. And then once those are established, and once those are diverse orchard and tree systems, once those are established and once they're good to go, then you have guaranteed food during the harvest part for whatever particular tree you have. And that's where the diversity comes in. So if you do just apples or just peaches, for example, because that's something relatable to a lot of us here in the South and Southeast. If you do just peaches and then you get like late spring frost, like we just like the other day, this is Texas, and we had like a 42 degree night the other day. That's kind of uncommon. Our last frost date is like somewhere in March. you know, it's going to wipe out all your peaches and then you won't get that peach harvest. But if you can, and then also peaches don't stay, they don't store very well unless you can them, freeze dry them, or dehydrate them or something like that. Just go with something like apples or pears, things that can store very, very well, and then do a diversity of them. So that way, even if something hits like a particular cultivar of whatever tree, you still have other ones you can go and harvest. On to you.
Here's another one. Sanitation system. Now, why would I put that so high? Well, I'll talk about another stat that nobody ever wants to talk about that very few people are aware of. What if I told you that 2/3 of the people that died in the Civil War wasn't by bullets at all? That's not how they died. They died because of sanitary issues. Most of the people that died in World War I, I'm talking like the doughboys in the trenches, it was sanitary reasons. They were getting trench foot. You name it. I mean, it all led into one thing or another. Sanitation has killed more people in combat than anything else. It's never been bombs. Never has been. It has always been. I mean, like I said, you could hear, there's a quote from Sherman, William Tecumseh Sherman, regarding, he said, you would wake up in the morning, you couldn't even hear the horns over the sounds of the coughs from everybody at Reveille. That's how bad it was. So you got to be thinking about that sanitation in a big, big way. You just don't go lay landmines on the ground, y'all. You need either a real ditch, a composting toilet. Those work. They actually do. We used one for a long time. And have some kind of decent gray water management, and then basic hygiene set up. And then if you're with a group of people, all it takes is one nasty SOB to get everybody messed up. I'm serious. All it takes is one person not properly handling their excrement. I mean, nobody likes to talk about this kind of stuff, but let's just keep it real. That's why I'm talking about World War I. They kind of had it together more in World War II. But really, in all of the wars from World War I backwards, sanitation killed more people than anything. So I would be seriously thinking about your sanitation. And then ladies, I mean, you have your special requirements as well. That's also going to be an issue. So you want to be thinking about that as well. That's why I put that down as number two. It's pretty darn important.
Now, to add to my previous point, Zegley had a good point. Trees, bushes, and perennials. Whenever I say tree systems, I automatically assume, you know, you understand that comes with tree guilds, which comes with bushes, shrubs, ground cover, things like that, perennials. But we'll categorize that tree systems part as overall getting perennials established. The next one I have is, depending on what's the reason for you having to start over. Like tornado was something that came into mind because I live in Tornado Alley and a bunch of us do. And it's also moving, so more of you guys are now a part of Tornado Alley. Is it reestablishing access? Because that should be pretty high on the list of what you need to do whenever you're approaching either a new property or a property that's been destroyed, is reestablishing access. Because the assets of that property don't really mean anything to you if you don't have access to them. And what comes along with access is typically earthworks. Because earthworks, and again, this really depends on the disaster or the reasoning for losing everything. But earthworks, you can naturally, you know, passively capture water with your earthworks, which goes back to Dad's previous point. But also you can use earthworks to get you access to other locations. So if you build, let's say you have to cross a ravine, instead of going down the ravine, then back up the ravine just to get from one side to the other, you could build a dam there and then use the dam wall to get you flat access to the other side of the ravine. So earthworks, which is, we'll call that one earthworks, shelter, and access.
All right, so next one I got here is going to be, now I'm going to say this, it's a double-edged sword, fire and cooking. Now, this is why I love that, what do you call that thing, that sun oven? Because it may not be tactical. It may, in fact, depending on what the nature of the emergency was, I mean, we're talking Mad Max here, I don't know. Last thing you want is a fire that everybody can smell, and people that have been fasting are definitely going to smell it. And then when you cook things, you want to be really cautious about what it is you cook, because, you know, it's why, like in sapper school or ranger school, you would always get busted because some idiot would open up the peanut butter. Well, you can't smell the cheese, but you can smell the peanut butter from an MRE, and it would give you away every time. So you got to be thinking about ways in which to conceal your footprint when it comes to fire. And I got news for you. You want to be running a cold camp at night. And what I mean by that is if you need warmth, you're better off to collect a bunch of embers during the day, cover it up Jeremiah Johnson style without setting yourself on fire, and then doing it that way and then starting over in the morning, depending on where you are. A lot of this is depending on a number of things. But you could be using things like a rocket stove where you could turn it on, turn it off quickly. Cast iron's pretty handy, but it is heavy. You want to make sure you have a reliable wood supply or whatever it is you're using. But that's where I'm also saying that if you can cook during the day and stew things, because when you're in a survival kind of situation or you're having to start over, depending on who's around you, you can stew something forever and a day. And you could really use that sun oven. Now, you're going to have to worry about the reflection of a sun oven, but you could see where the sun's hitting and where it's going to reflect to, and you can block off that part for any passersby to see it. So you want to be really cautious about that as well. That's a really good tactical tool that I've never ever heard anybody talk about that. But be especially cautious about any fire.
My next one is fertility. So you're probably intending on growing food to some extent, and you need to focus on that fertility in order to grow food well with less maintenance, less babying, things like that. So things you could do for fertility is utilizing your urine every single time. Use that for composting. Do active composting, like a hot pile of some sort. And you can still do that. I know, like, both of us have taught, like, using compost thermometer methods, but there's also other methods you can still use that are still fantastic, you know, ways of composting. They're just going to require a little bit more flipping, a little bit more effort, and some guessing involved, but you can still get a fantastic result from it. Just in case you have to flee to a different property and you forgot your compost thermometer. It's not high on my list if I have to bug out. I assume it's not on high on other people's lists either. And then another thing for fertility is the chicken tractor on steroids. You can utilize, especially if you're in a period of time where you can't go to Tractor Supply to get chicken feed, you can do the chicken tractor on steroids, feed your chickens, produce eggs, produce meat as well, and then at the same time, create your fertility on your property. So that way you're feeding your garden and you're feeding your chickens all at the same time, or tree systems, whatever it may be. You're feeding everything at the same doggone time.
I'm glad you brought that up, because here's another thing that, you know, with all that's going on right now, folks, you know, everybody knows about nitrogen going up. But what you haven't thought about is maybe the cost of your feed to maintain those animals going through the doggone roof, because all of it is one giant system where one thing bleeds into the other. So whatever you're paying right now, folks, and if it's coming on a truck, everything's going to be going up. So you're going to have to ask yourself, gee, does it make a whole lot of sense for me to continue running these chickens? I mean, I can think of 1,000 reasons I'd run chickens even if I didn't get eggs out of the deal. But you want to be thinking about that as well, because that's going to be a big thing. And that also brings me into my next one. And I'm going to say immediate food pipeline is what I would, you know, right off the bat, I'd be thinking about chickens using the chicken tractor on steroids. Even make something, if it's a stationary thing, maybe like a racking house where I'd have rabbits above it, because that is fast protein right there, man. Rabbits are very fast protein. And then, you know, that could go hand in hand with things like sprouts or microgreens. You don't need really much of a footprint at all for either one of those. And then a small kitchen garden, no matter what it is. I mean, grow food everywhere. If I weren't in a 7-day suspension right now in the middle of YouTube, I am showing examples of exactly what I'm talking about, where you're growing food in the midst of things that people don't even know they could eat. And I'm going to show you exactly how it's done. But yeah, get that immediate food pipeline going right off the bat. And that's where I love microgreens, because this time of year, I'm growing microgreens in between my carrots. I mean, why not? You can sit there and wipe them out, do it over and over and over and over again. I mean, that is a very low cost. I mean, they're blowing up, and I mean, you give them a couple of days and they're already blowing up already, and you can start eating on those things right now. So it's not a whole lot of food, but it is a contribution.
You're going to be eating on those things, Dad.
That's right. That's right.
So the next one I have is, so we've covered like an immediate food pipeline with that, and then we've covered like the long-term food pipeline with the tree systems and stuff like that. Next, I would focus on the medium, the in-between part, which is going to be some sort of main crop of some sort. I would go with something like here, if I had to pick a singular main crop that's going to be like a staple outside of meat, it's going to be a staple. I would pick sweet potatoes because they're kind of, they bring four sources of food to the party. There's the vines that you can immediately eat as they're growing. And then there's the tuber that you can harvest after 120 days, 90 days, whatever kind of sweet potato you have. But that's what I would do. And if you store it well, it's kind of you can use last year's sweet potatoes to grow this next year's sweet potatoes in the form. I mean, you can raise up slips and do stuff like that. And it's also going to be calorie dense and they store well. So immediate food pipeline, medium food pipeline, and then long-term food pipeline. And there's going to bring a bunch of calories in. I mean, there's whole cookbooks dedicated to just different ways to cook sweet potatoes. They're a very versatile form of food. They're easy to harvest. You can teach anybody to go harvest immediately. Processing, almost there is none. I mean, you cure it for a couple of weeks, but that's about it. Unlike, because I'm comparing it to things like grains, where there's a whole processing aspect to grains that you don't have when it comes to things like sweet potatoes. Now, the limitation on sweet potatoes is that they need warm conditions. So you could trade that out with like potatoes if you wanted to. Whatever kind of main crop would fit your area the best, go with that and plan on that after getting your immediate food pipeline squared away.
All right, my last one here is going to be, man, I could add so many more building systems, energy systems, things like that, but here's a big one no matter where you are. And I really, if I ever get 2 minutes to rub together, I keep saying that I'm going to write the definitive work on the tactical homestead. You want to think about your protection, particularly, I mean, you don't know what kind of world we're going to be in. I mean, you want to talk about fencing, even signs, putting a sign out there like high voltage, even though there may not be any voltage on it, putting dummy cameras out there. They don't know that they aren't working. You can get dummy cameras that like rotate and stuff that have a little red light on them. They're going to overpass you and maybe go to the next guy or gal because they think they're a little less prepared. But even having any kind of fence, even temporary, it is fundamentally baked into everybody's mind that it is a barrier. And unless you are a hardcore criminal, you're not going to think about just crossing that without giving it some thought. But any kind of barrier will help, even if it was nothing more than caution tape. I mean, think how well that works right now. Everybody's just hardwired to think, when I see a barrier, I just stop right there. And most people do. Now, you're also going to want some protection away from predators and stuff like that. So obviously, if you have temporary fencing for your animals, you're going to want that. And then you also want to see your avenues of approach there, where people may be approaching you or your family or your place. They're not going to go through a multi-floor rose bush, okay? They're not going to go through a thicket of blackberries. They're not going to do that. So those areas where you may not have those on the perimeter, that's going to be the likely places of approach. I mean, this is a longer class than I can give right now, but you want to be thinking about some kind of perimeter protection no matter the situation. Because if you're not, I mean, if anybody can just walk in there, then that's already an issue. All right, son.
Yeah, the next one I have is establishing some sort of power, whether it's like electricity or hydraulic power or whatever it may be. That's just going to make things, I mean, if you have mountains, you could do what Bill Mollison referred to as a tromp, a T-R-O-M-P-E, where you use the elevation to have it fall through a pipe. And then as it falls, it, you know, compresses the air down below. You capture that compressed air and then you can utilize it for everything. I mean, there's pneumatic versions of everything out now. He was even talking about like compressed air ran vehicles and things like that. But you want to, down the line, like I would put this lower on the list. This wouldn't be a high priority for me, but once the food is squared away, once the security is squared away, and then once like sanitation, things like that are all squared away, then I might start thinking about like methods of, you know, producing power. And again, that could be electricity, could be any form of electricity. Dad just sent me a really cool video the other day. I think it was in Pakistan. Was it Pakistan, Dad?
Yeah, I think so.
Of these, they were using this, it looked like a perpetual energy machine type thing, but they were using these massive magnets. I don't even know where you get magnets that big, but they were using two of them to power this crankshaft that went to a generator that they were using to pump water up out of a well and irrigate a farm. You could do things like that if you, especially if you're in like a Mad Max situation and you're out, you're able to go out there and scavenge things. If you come across some magnets, you might be able to produce some perpetual energy for your own property, your homestead.
Yeah, there's a lot of really awesome things out there that'll never see the light of day. When you have people like Stanley Meyer, who was running a car on water, T-Townsend Brown, all these other people whose work should have been paradigm changing for the entire world, and they've never seen the light of day. And there's a reason for that. They really don't want you knowing about this stuff. But, you know, like I showed William, or I sent him this video of these guys in Pakistan. I mean, yeah, it was running a pump to bring up water, and good night, that had to be a 20-horse motor that they had out there. But this thing, just through magnets, I mean, it created a perpetual motion machine, and you could have it do work. And the powers that shouldn't be don't want us to know about those things, but there's a whole lot of things they want to keep us in the Stone Age about. You know, I could do an entire show just on that alone. But I mean, there's a whole gang of people out there that have really done some incredible work in that space. But honestly, folks, think outside. I mean, things I didn't cover, like long-term long-term food systems. William kind of covered a little bit. Well, he did really with the perennials and the food forests and stuff like that. Energy systems, soil building. I mean, immediate food pipelines. You want to be thinking about all those things and getting them off and running, because with the world we live in right now, it could be any single day that any one of us may have to pick up and be on the first thing smoking out of there, which is part of the reason why, yeah, I love my canned good, the things that we can here, but I love my freeze-dried stuff even better. On my back, I could probably carry a month's worth of food freeze-dried, but I couldn't dream of doing that. I couldn't dream of doing it when we're walking around with glass jars. So that's also another thing to consider about too. I mean, folks, it's in our wheelhouse to talk about this preparedness stuff. I wish we could just talk exclusively about, you know, permaculture, but you ain't doing any permaculture if you don't have everything else intact. I mean, what is all this? I mean, you know, I get complaints like, I wish you would just talk about permaculture. Well, okay, what good is permaculture if A, I don't have a country, and B, I don't have a safe country or a stable country? Yeah, we seem to be doing in 250 years what it took the Romans 2 millennia to do. Anything to add, son?
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody to check out the Permaculture Orchard podcast. It's Stefan Subkowiak's podcast that he does with his son. I just recently did an interview with him. It came out last Friday. Dad's been interviewed by them before. It's an awesome podcast, and I think they do a really good job. And how often do you guys see like a father-son team? It's just us and them, I think, that I've ever noticed. But yeah, go check it out. Go subscribe. Tell them you said hi.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, I want to thank everybody that was in here live. Hopefully we'll be out of the outhouse here before too long on YouTube. All right, y'all. Till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive. Wisdom from Saul and permaculture dream. Let the idea unfold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling anxious, food. We've got the answers. All we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the shame. Watch the world spin. From the smallest sprout to harmony begin in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat, feel the vibe and thrive.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money.